The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Welcome to The Brains Behind It, the official podcast of BrainHackers.com. The source for smart strategies to improve your life, one brain hack at a time. In this podcast, we talk to the leaders and innovators behind great organizations and find out the secret to their success. Here's your host, editor-in-chief of BrainHackers.com and two-time Guinness record holder for memory, Dave Farrow.
Hey there, Brain Hackers. Dave Farrow here. I have Gary Stone on the line. He is a veteran of research into different financial markets. He lives in Australia, but he's done a lot of research in the American market. And he is all about helping people get rich. So if that interests you in the slightest, stick around. Gary, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me on, Dave.
All right. So you've researched the markets. Your book is about wealth creation. I've heard some good things about you. You want to get more known in the American market, but you've basically taken the view of wealth creation in America. There's a lot of people who have gone from nothing to very wealthy. I had absolutely nothing when I came to America from Canada, and I've built quite a large business and investments. But then you take that and you apply that to the Australian market. So tell people as quickly as possible how they can go from nothing to being financially independent and doing well.
Well, effectively, the whole book is based on research, and it is one negative comment about it. There's probably too much research and numbers in it for most people, but there's a lot of things to take away from that.
I think because there's so many financial, there's so many self-help books that don't have the numbers, I think that you going in that direction is actually a positive.
It is. And so the book is it's a reference book, if you like, but we've had a lot of people that have got it. They get it. The penny drops because of the research. And so it's an evidence-based book. The numbers come out, and the left brain people, I guess, engineers and software engineers and those sort of people really like the material. But the essence of the book is it's a story that more people should understand that don't. And it's about using exchange-traded funds and the simplicity of them, the lower fees, but also the better performance. And the better performance comes out of the fact that exchange-traded funds do not use diversification into other asset classes. So,
All right. So start off with somebody who knows, don't
diversify.
But if somebody knows nothing about the market, I believe in diversification, so maybe we'll have an argument. But if somebody knows nothing about the markets, start off to what is exchange-traded fund?
Okay, good. So an exchange-traded fund is an index fund. So it's in the United Kingdom, they call it an index tracker because it tracks the index. So the idea is that is rather than investing into an active diversified mutual fund, you actually invest into an index fund which follows and mimics and tracks the stock market index, such as, of course, the name one everybody knows is the S&P 500, but there are other indices out there as well that you can...
So what this fund, like a mutual fund, is this fund is a conglomeration of tons of different companies, thousands of companies perhaps, right?
Correct.
In different market sectors. And what you're saying is go to an index fund, if I'm following you correctly. A mutual fund might be more diversified into different industries, but an index fund is more industry specific.
And not only into other industries, but into other asset classes such as bonds. And the reason that people go to that, or the funds that do that, is to try and what they call flatten the equity curve. So flatten the movement of the actual equity curve over time, which is also to remove volatility is the other term. So to when the market falls, to remove some of that fall out of the equation to make things a bit not as up and down as what they would be.
Okay, so in other words, if I'm investing my hard-earned dollars and the market shifts, I'm trying to limit my risk. So explain to people, we're going to do a whole bunch of Q&A on just definitions alone. Explain to people what, if they don't know already, what the equity curve is.
So an equity curve is if you, so you're looking at a graph, and a graph starts, say, at 100, and it will then move up and down based on the price movement of the individual stocks or asset classes that make up that.
So we're talking about, like, maybe I'm buying soybeans or something, right? So as the value of the soybeans go up or down,
the equity, it's plotted on a daily basis. So it's a plotted price curve on a daily basis, and as the price moves up and down, so the curve, the squiggle, will go up and down. And so, and the idea is that you don't want it to fall by too much, because that represents a loss only if you sell, of course.
Right. So it starts here and it goes kind of wobbly, but it works its way up, and you end here. You started here, and that's when you cash out or whatever, and you've made your money. And so that equity curve is the more smoothed out version of the graph. Is that right?
Correct. So the more smoothed out one is what mutual funds are trying to do. Mm-hmm. And the reason that they're trying to do that is because what they found over many decades of doing this is that if it becomes too volatile and the falls become too deep, people take their money out. So they're trying to stop people taking their money out.
Mutual funds don't want people to take their money out. Yeah. Okay. So can somebody invest in this? Before we get into, like, who could invest in everything, so try to make it clear the difference between your investment strategy as opposed to the traditional investment strategy of diversification. So diversification is, I buy a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of this, so if one falls, the other ones protect me. And you say that that's actually could be more dangerous, and there's a better way to protect yourself.
It is, because most people, and this is the stats come out from, I use a lot of the ICI, Investment Company Institute. They do tons of research. And the reason people are trying to do this, obviously, is to stop the downside. But what they're doing, what the research has shown out, is that 91% of people who invest in mutual funds in the United States do so for retirement. And here's the thing, diversification is put out there, propagandized out there by all the financial fraternity, for people who are investing to stop this downside. But here's the trick: retirement, the average time to retirement for somebody investing is 33 years, whereas diversification is a great risk management tool for 1 to 5 years. So there's a mismatch between the risk management technique being used and the time frame.
I see what you're saying. So if oil stocks dip now, I mean, chances are over like 2 or 3 years, they'll go back up. So if I'm planning for a long period of time, then diversification is not helping me. Is it hurting me though? Is it a bad thing?
Fantastic question, because that's the point, right? Is because diversification over the long term is a far bigger growth limiter than what it is a loss limiter. So the idea behind diversification is to limit loss. But what it actually does is it puts this huge handbrake on the growth of your investment. So it becomes the amount that you give up in growth is far greater than the amount you get protected from loss.
Over the long term.
So if you've got the idea is that you are investing for 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years, you know, so you're somebody in your 20s, 30s, or 40s, and you've got a multi-decade investing horizon, the worst thing you can do is use diversification as a risk management.
So it basically slows your growth over the long term, over the extremely long term. Now, the interesting thing is, in practical terms, though, I know that financial analysts and everything talk about people investing for their retirement and starting when they're in their 20s, but I don't know anybody in their 20s who actually does that. You know what I mean? So in practical terms, aren't most people who are investing in mutual funds hoping for some sort of either dividend or payment within 10 years, maybe, something like that? Or am I wrong? What's the stats on that?
Well, they're not. So this is the thing, because investing, where mutual funds, the main instrument that mutual funds are used for retirement are 401ks.
Mm-hmm. So that's when you're entering the workplace. And so you're talking your 30s or 40s, you still have to your 60s or 80s before you need that money. Okay, so yeah, so it is
investing. But people don't take any notice of that, because they kind of put their money away, and they might have a match from the employer, and they just leave it in the background. But what they don't realize is they are forfeiting hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars for two reasons. One is this growth limitation of diversification, and the massively huge fees that they're paying that they wouldn't otherwise pay if they took some control themselves and used exchange traded funds.
Well, I think there's a lot of fear that people don't want to take those chances. But In my experience, the greater the risk, the greater the reward in almost every area. And I've seen so many people. If you see people who have lost their wealth, you know, whether they lost it in the economic crisis, or they lost their house and they're underwater, or stocks crash or something like that. You know, time and time again, they did all of the textbook things that were expected of them in order to protect their wealth, and it didn't help. So I'm a big believer in what you're talking about. Although I've taken a slightly different path, I do have some stocks. I've taken a lot of control over things. You want to know what my strategy is? We can talk a little bit about stock plans here. And again, this is my money. I'm just doing it for me. I don't recommend it for anybody else, unless perhaps you have my IQ and you know you have some free money capital to play with. But I've noticed a big thing in companies that have had scandals. There are major multinational corporations whose stocks just go into the toilet when there's a major problem. Like, I mean, I'm thinking of like when Toyota had that breakage problem. I think Nissan right now is having a problem with their emissions, where they fake their emissions. A great example is a BP. During the BP oil disaster, everybody worldwide heard about that horrible ecological disaster that happened in southern United States, and their stock was in the toilet. Well, it's 2018 now, and they're doing pretty well, right? If somebody would have bought at the bottom of that scandal, they're doing very well. So I've noticed a few things like that. I also like to I guess that would be considered a values investor. I'm waiting for a stock to become lower than its value. The price becomes well below what I think its value is, and then I wait for it to ratchet back up. What do you think?
Well, the problem with that is that if you're doing that with individual stocks, then they may go to zero and never come back. And there's some fantastic examples of that, like Enron and WorldCom and Lehman Brothers and a few others, right?
So yeah, a lot of very surprising ones, absolutely.
Correct. Yep. So those are big, you know, supposedly value stocks that could right. not go to zero, and they can go to zero. And they can also stay there for long, long periods of time. Like Citigroup is, you know, after the 2008 fall, it still hasn't recovered more than a third of its, so there's still two-thirds of the price that it fell that has not recovered yet. So you could end up being down there for a long, long period of time.
Yeah, but I think Wells Fargo, their recent scandal, is a little bit different, and they'll actually bounce back faster. But I think the thing is, the reason why I'm comfortable with this is because I work in PR. I run a PR firm. Yeah. So I think I'm, at least I like to think that I am, a good judge of whether a scandal is fatal or whether it's something that makes a stock unpopular. Not and doesn't affect the true value of the company.
But as you said earlier, most folk aren't going to be doing that. They're right. worried about their retirement. They're not going to do their retirement money. But here's the beauty: an index can never go to zero, and an index will always recover. So if you did that with an index, you'd be far better off, because it's not going to plummet to zero. It's going to recover the average time over 116 years for the Dow Jones to recover, including dividends, is 6 years from even its deep crashes. So you know you've got an index, it's going to be diversified, you're not picking individual stocks. If you're doing this with the S&P 500, you're doing it across 500 stocks. But you know, there's another index, which is my favorite index, which we can talk about whether I divulge it or not, because there's a course that people can buy that can actually get to understand all this, and which ETF, which exchange traded fund, which index is the best one.
I mean, to transparency though, you make money at doing this for people as well. So you've got a dog in the fight, so to speak, right?
Well, we don't manage any money. We just do this basically, it's knowledge base and skills.
Yeah, you're an educational.
I'm an education.
How to do it. Yeah.
Correct. And the idea is not just to teach the knowledge. Is to transfer the knowledge to actually apply the knowledge. So that's the skill level. Mm-hmm. So we coach people through our products and services to be able to do this, why they should do it and how to do it. But the key thing is, you know, the bit for me that's trying to get this message out there is because the financial fraternity really are, you know, in inverted commas, don't sue me please, ripping people off. And they're ripping people off, taking advantage of their naivety. They are pushing this message
and their
out
fear there. Of working in the markets.
Correct. So they're pushing out that you need to diversify. And it really is a misnomer to say to people, you need to be diversified for 30, 40 years in your retirement, because we're the experts at rebalancing between different asset classes. That is a rip-off message. They do not need to use diversification. They don't need the complexity to pay these high fees.
And they're just doing that diversification, like you said, to limit people from taking money out of their fund, not necessarily to have larger gains.
It's within the fund's interest, not the people's interest. And people need, and that's why people are getting to, I think it's over 80% of people in America are going to retire with a nest egg that's not big enough to last their retirement, let alone a comfortable one.
Well over that, especially in the newer numbers. Okay, so I agree with you, and I like your basic premise. In fact, I'm going to be reading your book and everything, and it may influence how I invest. However, I have done very well off of a few choice picks of myself, so I may trust myself a few times until I get burned. But then again, you're looking at somebody who I used to be a card counter and very successful at it too. So maybe I just like to place a bet sometimes, and some mistakes are expected. I want to switch tactics here a little bit and talk a little bit about Bitcoin. What do you think, as somebody who follows the markets? You I like the way your mind thinks, because you go counter to conventional wisdom. I know conventional wisdom there's a financial incentive for that conventional wisdom. So I'm right there with you. I've seen so many times where I've called out bad science because it followed. You could tell that some science was really pushed because there was a financial agenda. There was funding behind it, that sort of thing. And there's some other, other things out there. So you've kind of uncovered that. I'm curious what your thoughts are on Bitcoin or the future of blockchain.
Yeah, well, blockchain, you just mentioned the word there. I think blockchain as a technology definitely has a future, undoubtedly, and to be used in other areas other than cryptocurrencies. So I think you're going to see this moving into large scale computer development. The concept, the technology is going to be used in things that are just going to do with cryptocurrency. So that's the main thing I think that's going to come out of it.
One of the things I've heard of is transparent contracts. People going back and forth with contracts using a blockchain, so that it can be 100% transparent. Research being done using blockchain so that anybody can follow your notes and follow your research. All sorts of sciences are actually taking advantage of this to get the most authentic process. There's even people making business plans and financial statements and things like that for their corporations and their startups using the blockchain technology so people can follow it.
Absolutely. I think one of the biggest areas, and I think you're going to see the big, the large IT companies make hay with this area, and that is big data. Mm-hmm. Government, government data that personal information being kept is getting hacked all over the place. Mm-hmm. Banks and these sorts of things where they need to protect the data of their customers and of the citizens. I think you're going to see blockchain moving into that over the next 20 years. So people that are in the technology, companies that are good at the technology are going to be stocks you should watch as well.
What about Bitcoin? Is Bitcoin just like the paper tiger here? It has this great opportunity, but I see the way I think everybody talks about, hey, when you can actually have a stick wear around your neck or put in your wallet or something, I can pay something out of my Bitcoin account at a point of sale, then Bitcoin will take off. But I think if somebody could do that, they would have done that by now.
Okay, well, let's put this, I'm a big picture person, so let's get big picture perspective on this. I heard somebody talk about 15 years ago about the euro.
Yeah.
And the research that they had done on currencies around the world for over, you go back to Babylon, 4,000 years ago, Babylon, used things like options and things that, so they were quite an advanced currency financial environment, right? And this guy said, on average, through humankind, it's taken 150 years for a currency to actually establish itself. And he was saying that the euro is going to take another 100 years to establish itself. So if you put that, I know things are happening at faster rates.
And that makes sense with Brexit challenging it and like things like that go up and down. You need to have a longer time period.
It needs to get tested. It needs to get thoroughly, because you're talking about people's money as an exchange, as a way of exchanging goods between people. It's a new boy on the block. It's not an asset class. I think people have got overhyped about it. As a whole, an asset investment class. And sure, when anything breaks ground and is new, the early adopters are the people that always make a killing in whatever it is that we bring out. And this just happens to be a currency. So, yes, I don't think it's going to disappear. it's going to be whether Bitcoin's going to be the one or not, or it's going to be some others that we haven't even heard of now. You know, Google wasn't first to market. It was about 10th or 11th to market. Can you even remember what the first search engine was that came to market? People can't even remember that.
It was like there was a Red Rover back then and a few others.
AltaVista.
Yahoo. And of course, AOL Search, you know, ran it for a long time. And then, you know, Yahoo dominated them for ages. But they just didn't
Correct. So first to market is not necessarily the one that lasts out. And in fact, it's almost every time not. So somebody else is going to come out with a better idea. They're going to make up for all the deficiencies and the different cryptocurrencies out there.
Makes sense.
And probably hasn't even been thought of yet, the one that's
going to last. Yeah, I wrote a whole blog about this on my MySpace page. Yeah,
okay.
It's crazy. It's a little MySpace joke. All right, then. That makes a lot of sense. So if you do want to invest in Bitcoin, then expect 100 years before you get a payoff then. Huh?
And just put a little bit, and don't treat it as the only asset class you should invest in. It'd be far better to look at the stock market and go into an index fund.
Yeah, no, you really made me think of an index funds in a new way. So it's fantastic. All right, tell people how they can get a hold of you if they want to.
Well, the book Blueprint to Wealth, Financial Freedom in 15 Minutes a Week, was published some 21 months ago in September of 2016. It has a website, blueprinttowealth.com. But we also have a short online course on the book, which has less research in it and more outcomes. And you can get access to that course at fixmynestegg.com, and people can go there. They can have a look at a bit of a video about what's in the book and what they can get, and it's a club. So we've actually positioned it as a club. You get some access to webinars, live webinars, etc. that go along with the book and the investors club. Yeah.
All right, awesome. Well, thank you very much for being on the show, Gary.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Dave. I'd like to talk to you some more in the future about other things if we may.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. This is going to be great. Well, this has been a great show. And anybody who's thinking of investing, I think, needs to get this wisdom right away, because there's a lot of misinformation out there. And what you're saying makes a lot of sense to me, because I've had a lot of success in life. I would say because I've made a study of humans, of what makes humans tick. And what you're talking about how these funds are doing what's best in their interest, not necessarily what's in the interests of, you'd think their best interest would be to get the biggest returns, but it's not. Their best interest is to get the most number of people signing up for their fund, and that's not the exact same thing. So you found a little bit of nuance that I really, really like.
To get the fees.
Yeah, to get the fees, absolutely. All right, thank you very much for being on the show.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you for listening to The Brains Behind It. And remember to check out brainhackers.com for more. If you have a suggestion for the next interview or comment, please email editor@brainhackers.com. If you want a free 30-minute marketing consultation from Dave Farrow and his team, then email editor@brainhackers.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.